Support for The Front Row on FM 89.1 comes from the Community Foundation of West Texas and from Citibank. Citibank's wealth management team of advisors, private bankers, and trust officers help customers create personalized strategies to help connect with long-term goals. More information on Citibank Wealth Management is available at 806-687-2955. And from Texas Tech's JT and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Vast opportunities abound in art, music, theater, and dance. Dean Noel Zoller invites you to enjoy some of the 800 performances and exhibits produced each year by vastly talented students, faculty, and visiting artists. Texas Tech's JT and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts, vastly different. The Texas Tech University School of Music presents a concert this Friday evening in Hemley Recital Hall that features Ensemble Bravura, conducted by Philip Mann. The program features Texas Tech University faculty members and a composition by composer Noel Zoller, who is dean of the J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts at Texas Tech University. We'll have all the details on today's show. I hope you can stay tuned. On today's edition of The Front Row, we are in the Texas Tech University School of Music, and we're visiting with Philip Mann, who is Director of Orchestral Studies here at the Texas Tech University School of Music. Also, Tatiana Mann, who is Assistant Professor of Practice in Keyboard Studies, and Noel Zoller, who is both Professor of Music and also the Dean of the J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts here at Texas Tech. Welcome to all three of you. Thank you very much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Philip Mann, let me begin with you. There is a concert coming up this Friday evening in Hemley Recital Hall, presented by a group called Ensemble Bravura. Now, what is that?
It's a new orchestra, although this is actually its second season, and it's one way that we're hoping to kind of make our new mark here in the School of Music. It's an elite ensemble. It's an ensemble that focuses on faculty collaborations, opportunities for mentorship with faculty leading with students. But it's essentially a small, flexible ensemble of some of our best students that are also coming to it with a really fantastic attitude. For me, it's the place where every rehearsal is just about the music. The expectations are professional, our rehearsal cycles are professional, and our programming is ambitious in its expectations of our students. And this first program is certainly a great example of that. Three works that really stretch even a very fine professional orchestra. And what we begin with, I'll just use one example, the Kafka Classical Symphony, is a good example of how I think about creating the first sounds of a season. I really think of this as one of the first major ensemble performances of just the entire School of Music. And how do we set the stage? How do we set people up for a great year? And I can think of very few works with more of that kind of joie de vivre, this effervescent motion, a youthful energy, than the incredible virtuosic piece of the Prokofiev's Classical Symphony. It's a work of a youthful composer looking backwards for inspiration, but bringing to the 20th century an interesting approach.
Right. And so this ensemble is free of the sort of curriculum that you would think of in the academy. This is a group that sort of operates beyond that, just for the fun of making music?
Well, it's actually very much based on two things. I mean, one, an opportunity to play some fantastic repertoire from the canon, and two, to actually also provide a resource for our faculty and students as an outlet for research, for collaboration with our most outstanding faculty. This is a great example of having Tatiana and Noel here, one of the best performing faculty here in Tatiana, and a fantastic member of our composition faculty. So it's a showcase ensemble. It's a flagship ensemble in the sense that we hope that this will help to elevate the college profile internationally. I have plans for doing some commercial recordings with this group. Everything that you'll see from this ensemble really is not what I hope its feeling is, its character, its sensibility is a youthful professional space. It's a place where we unabashedly throw ourselves at music, and I put I put this at like the beginning of the year when the kids have the most energy left over from the summer. And to do things that are really outside their comfort zones as well. The three works on this program have extremely different sensibilities. All three of them look both backwards and forwards. They also look at the relationships of the musicians individually, often one on a part on this program, in opposition to each other. And there's a reconciliation that sometimes happens and sometimes in overt fashion doesn't happen, particularly in the Harlequin. So it's a place where everybody is emboldened and is important. Everyone is a soloist. Everybody has high expectations. And what I hope is that when the students finish a year with this ensemble, one, they feel like they've done a service for the school and the college, but two, maybe they're just a little bit taller.
Right. Wonderful. So you've already talked about the Prokofiev Classical Symphony, his first symphony, most youthful. And as you said, it's incredibly energetic, wonderful to listen to, easy piece to assimilate if you just come to the concert and hear it.
If you don't smile when you hear that piece, there's something wrong with you.
Right.
I mean, this is a piece that it's also a treasure for musicians. There is a certain place in the canon of Western repertoire where you can say a certain number of pieces and every musician at heart will just smile on the inside. And an orchestral musician will smile on the outside when you say Prokofiev. Now, full disclosure here, the second thing they do after smile is maybe grimace because they think of the practice required. Because it is truly, right. It is a virtuoso showpiece. And it's also, I should probably mention, you know, one of the roles of an orchestra at a school with such fine talent, both within our student ranks, but especially within our faculty, is to provide places for growth. This is not a piece that they can play in the first rehearsal. This is a piece that they truly see the measure of hard work and the value of it. So when we finish a rehearsal cycle, they're understandably tired, but they have that satisfaction of actually seeing something achieved musically. And that reinforces what the faculty are working on with their students. One of the things that I think is most important for a conservatory or major university program to instill in their students is the value of hard work. What we call, maybe it's discipline, stick-to-itiveness, maybe you call it grit, but that is the quality that is the most highly correlated to success in our business.
All right. Well, Noel Zoller, welcome, glad you're with us.
Lots
of folks,
here,
of course, know you as the dean of the college, but you're also a composer, a professor of music, and you have a piece on this program. Tell us about how this piece began.
Oh gosh, well, until Philip spoke, I didn't know I had a whole lot in common with Prokofiev. But this too is a fairly youthful piece. It's more than 30 years old at this point. It was a seminal piece in my development. It's being played because Philip asked for a piece, and this is one that I like a lot still. And you know, part of what I'm fond of, I guess, here is that I've always been fascinated by the piano, and this was my first attempt at a concertino for piano. It's only about 8 minutes long, but it was also a way for me to begin to think about how a very contemporary atonal language could be structured in a way that used romantic gestures. And part of that romanticism is, I think, captured by the Harlequin figure, because while this is not about necessarily an unrequited love or a notion of romantic love, it is about a harmonic language, and a harmonic language which is seeking a kind of progression throughout the work and a way to tie all of the parts together, and it never happens, really.
Okay.
Even when you think it's going to happen, it sidesteps the traditional methods of harmony and moves on its own. For many years, I think composers who of my age, who developed during the time that I did, you know, were basically told you don't use triads, you don't use conventional rhythmic patterns, and you don't use, you know, gestures which have been heard over and over again in the literature. And I think, you know, my take on this was, well, if the triads show up as part of a much larger syntax, that's okay. and you don't attach the same associations with them as you would in a work by Haydn or Prokofiev or Mahler or anybody else. And so, you know, that's basically what happens here. And there's this, there's a traditional dialogue that it develops between the piano and the chamber orchestra. Attacks are very important. The way in which they interact is very important. There are openings, which basically, for me at least, comes from the Brahms Second Piano Concerto, where windows open and things happen for the orchestra, and then they close and another window opens for the piano. And this sort of juxtaposition of forces, you know, is as old as music itself, but it's reinterpreted here.
You mentioned solo piano. How else did you score it in terms of the orchestra?
Well, it's basically a traditional chamber orchestra, mm-hmm. with winds, brass, and strings, and percussion. And percussion plays a very important part in this. I think Philip and I both have an affinity, especially for timpani. And the timpani plays a huge role here. And I see it as a instrument which moves between the piano and the ensemble. And so things that happen in the timpani, there's an extended solo for the timpani at the very beginning of the piece, and things that happen in that solo are immediately transferred to parts of the ensemble and eventually the piano. So one of the, I think, most important parts about using a chamber orchestra as opposed to a symphonic orchestra is that you can be much more, well, you can use the instrumentalists to the fullest extent that you want to. You can make the demands of them that you couldn't make of orchestral musicians. Or if you did, you would have to do it very carefully. you know, these are virtuoso parts in each of the instruments as well as the piano.
Well, we're excited to hear it Friday evening.
Looking forward to it.
Pieces, that's going to be fantastic. And we have the pianist,
yes.
who will play. Tatiana Mann is with us. Tatiana, tell us, what is it like to open up it's not a brand new piece, but it's a piece by a living composer who's with us. What's that like to open up and say, okay, I need to digest this and work it up and make it a performable thing? How do you do that?
Absolutely. I actually really enjoyed this process. So with this particular piece, as Professor Zeller mentioned, he is not using a common tonality. So, and that creates a whole different layer to an interpretation and also opens new venues. Since the romantic music, for instance, is very much driven by the harmonic language, when you take that away, you take away something we're used to. But with that said, there's new freedom to interpretation. And also what is fascinating to me is that no matter what, there is such a connection between a musical line and language that the human ear, for me personally as a performer, and I hope for the listeners as well, you can still detect clear phrases that are inherent in the musical line that are not dependent on the typical harmonic tension of the dominant and tonic, for instance, but nonetheless, they're very much in there. And so it is a really enjoyable process for me of discovery and fascination. And the more familiar I became with the piece, the more things that I can hear and the more I can play with it and the more detail that I can add. So I think that's really very enjoyable.
Professor Zeller talked about the juxtaposition between the piano and the orchestra, but all you have in front of you is the piano, I guess, I'm assuming.
Actually, this is an orchestral score.
All right, mm-hmm. Okay. So you can see how that works visually
yes.
in your preparation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And it was interesting, as he mentioned, the timpani. Piano is a percussion instrument.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, as a percussion instrument, we have the duality of the percussion, the mechanism of the hammer, and of course the pitch of the voice, the pitch of the string instruments. So I feel that I think it's an absolutely brilliant combination, the timpani and the piano as connected entities, because we have the percussive attack, but then we have the extenuating pitch that connects us to the orchestra. So I think that's one of the really cool aspects of this piece.
Is the piano used in conventional ways?
Yeah, I'm not trying to, prepare the piano.
Yes,
right, that's
yes,
yeah,
yes.
Right.
As, you know, Cage had,
yes.
had invented, or to use special effects like harmonics, et cetera, or bowing strings, or using plectrums against the strings. This is more or less a straightforward piano part, which always stimulates my imagination.
Well, it's straightforward, but on the other hand, what I really like about it, it covers the entire range of the instrument. So piano, we have 88 keys, and I promise you will hear the lowest ends of the instrument and the highest, or some of them anyway. So I think that's what makes this part very effective as well. And it also explores a lot of different techniques of the piano. Of course, you'll hear a lot of pedal, then fast passages. There's some polymeter going on, some polyrhythm. So I think it has a very good exploration of the timbre of the instrument, as well as the actual possibilities that I can do as,
yeah.
as a pianist as
right.
well.
I love watching you flip through the score as you talk
uh-huh.
about how you,
yes.
various ways the piano is used. That's wonderful.
Absolutely.
So I just would comment on, in terms of the range of the piano, Tatiana's absolutely right. Every note on the piano is used at some point during this piece.
Yeah.
But what's incredibly interesting is that the first recording of this piece that was done in the 1980s by Opus One Records, the wonderful producer of several of my recordings, Max Schubel, who owned Opus One, convinced Busendorfer to donate an Imperial for the recording.
Oh, wow.
And then called me and said, Noel, you have to come down here and use the extra octave.
Yes.
Which I did.
Those pianos have, yes, because for our listeners, those pianos have extra notes
yes.
at the bottom, which are
yeah.
really,
correct.
Really cool. So you
wow.
used those.
I used those. So it was even in the recording, it was even deeper and lower than
oh, wow.
it gets with a standard piano.
What is it like to be a composer and over a number of years be able to see your piece played in a variety of venues with a variety of conductors and artists? I assume they're different every time, I'm sure. What is that like to see a piece of yours come to life in different ways?
Well, I think that's the exciting part about live performance. That's why we do what we do, because every performer, every conductor, every pianist, every instrumentalist will bring a slightly different interpretation of the parts that you've written. And if you don't enjoy what a performer brings to your music, then I think you're missing a large part of what the collaborative nature of music really is. And that's what is exciting about it. This piece was originally commissioned by the new music pianist Rebecca Lebrecht, who unfortunately passed away very young. But it's been played by the American Composers Orchestra. It's been played by the Center for New Music at the University of Iowa. It's been played by, at least a half a dozen or dozen ensembles. Throughout the United States and Asia and in Europe. And I've been very fortunate in that I've attended most of these performances, but I always marvel at what different performers bring to it. Sometimes I cringe, but not very often.
All right. Well, that's wonderful. And it must be great as a conductor, Philip Mann, to have the composer with you. when you're doing a piece.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, just for your listeners, I'm sitting here with a smile just beaming across my face because I'm looking at two of my absolute favorite people, two of the most important people here to the college. Perhaps our most accomplished soloist in Tatiana and one of our most accomplished composers here, finishing up a process here for me of taking a tour through our composition faculty. And to anytime you introduce a work to an audience, there's a responsibility to it. But there's just a tremendous joy as a conductor to be a part of a collaboration like that. And the reason why I'm really smiling is when I look over here and I see them gesticulating, you know, with energy and how excited they are. It's a reminder to me that, you know, as a conductor, the other hat that I wear is as a programmer. And great performances are really the results of great ingredients. You know, great characters that work well together, great artists that have something to say, evocative music that tastes right with each other. And I think this program has the makings of all of that. In introducing a work for the first time to an audience, now actually there are two Lubbock premieres on this program. I'm sure the Classical Symphony's been played in Lubbock, right, but the Britten hasn't. And for me as a conductor, I would say the responsibility often lays more on the living composer, introducing that in the right way. We call it in the business, to say it a little bit candidly, we like to give pieces legs. We want to equip an audience with the information. And the information sounds dry. I would say the perspective of the composer and the performers of what we love about a work, so that they're rooting for the work, so they know what to find that's magical or special about it. And it's different in every different type of music and every different composer. But in this case, it's an opportunity to introduce Noel Zahler's music to this Ensemble Bravura crowd and to reintroduce his music in some ways to our next crop of students who haven't experienced it here yet in Lubbock. So there's a responsibility with that, but I think about that as not the responsibility of this week, but of the as it factors out into the future. There will be people that will love this piece that may take up an opportunity to play other works of Noel's. And similarly, you know, someone might hear Tatiana's playing and then find another collaboration or an opportunity there. So it's just one snapshot in the life of a musical ecosystem, you might say. And as a conductor, the combination of this repertoire with these artists, I think, are what make both the School of Music and the College of Visual and Performing Arts here so special. But simply, I think Noel said it right, this is what makes live music so special. We don't know what the responses will be for each of these respective pieces until they've had them on that day. And if we perform the concert again the next day, we would expect a different response because the world's different the next day. And that's why it's alive, that's why it's spontaneous, and to take Tatiana's word, that's why it's a language.
Right. Well, before we get away, let's talk about the very first piece on the program. Some music by Benjamin Britten that looks back to some music by Rossini, I guess. Tell us a little bit about that.
In the style of these soirées musicales. Right. And, you know, here I am telling you about the combination of three pieces on a program, but I'm also thinking about kind of a whole semester a little bit. You know, in this first few months, we have works of Stravinsky, Vaughan Williams, Britten, Zahler, Prokofiev, and with the exception of Noel's piece, all of these pieces were worked on right around the turn of the century, between about 1910 to 1914, 1917. Now, technically, the soirée musicales were premiered in 1938, but really, in some ways, the language preceded that. And I am just fascinated by the difference of these composers who, with one foot, that it's looking backwards for ancient inspiration in modality, pre-modality, ancient types of sounds that someone like Stravinsky might be evoking, but the other foot firmly planted in modernity, and to see how these different composers and the juxtaposition of the ancient and the modern, how they have taken a different approach. So for Britten, he kind of has a little bit of a get out of jail free card, perhaps, in that he just says, well, this is in the style of Rossini. And for me, that fit on this program because it's a work, it's a chamber orchestra work, it's small little movements. They are almost like character pieces. I mean, dance-like character pieces. Again, one on a part, similar orchestration and orchestra to the Harlequin. And then also more than similar in sensibility to the Prokofiev Classical Symphony. They're very, I use the word effervescent already, but it's kind of this Italian, you might say frizzante, is like this bubbly, amazing kind of cappuccino frothiness of energy. And what that really means to an audience and to a performer is expectations of virtuosity an emphasis on color, an emphasis on the individual mixing in to change the color. And from a very technical, perhaps dry standpoint, it's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity as a conductor to reinforce with these three specific composers on this program how much every single note matters. Noel's work has an efficiency and an accuracy of notation that is reminiscent of someone like Ravel or maybe Prokofiev in his symphonies. Britten takes that same kind of approach in this piece of a Rossini sensibility. In other words, there's a sense in opening these scores that just an accent on one note or the way a tie finishes across a phrase is miraculously important. Everything can be found there, whether it's simply the phrase of a timpani setting up the entire shape of a work, or in the case of the musicales of Britten, just a simple rhythm giving you a little bit of a rambunctious romp, kind of like a horse ride of Rossini. So it's a reinforcement that the little things matter.
Ensemble Bravura plays this Friday night at 7:30 p.m. in Hemley Recital Hall. Tatiana Mann, Noel Zoller, Philip Mann, thank you very, very much for being on the front row today.
Thank you, Clint.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Today's edition of our program will be on our website, kttz.org, later today. Rachel Boyd produces The Front Row. I'm your host, Clint Barrick. Thanks for tuning in and listening. Support for The Front Row comes from the Lubbock Symphony Orchestra announcing the 2019-2020 season. More information is at lubbocksymphony.org.